keep silent before him. Holy God, we are silent before you as we pray and seek to listen to your voice and not ours. So speak to us that we might be bold in our living as your servants here in the Senate as well as at home. In these difficult times, watch over us and lead us back to your throne to find our peace in you. In your holy name we pray. Amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Secretary, call the roll.
Senators Brown, Callahan, Chappelle Nadal, Crowell, Cunningham, Curls, Dempsey, Dixon, Engler, Goodman, Green, Justice, Kevany, Kehoe, Kraus, Lager, Lamping, Lemke, Mayer, McKenna, Munslinger, Nieves, Parson, Pierce, Ferguson, Richard, Ridgway, Roop, Schaff, Schaefer, Schmidt, Stouffer, Wasson, Wright Jones. Journal of the Senate, first regular session, 50th day.
Senator from 23rd.
Mr. President, I move further reading and the journal be dispensed with and the same be approved as though having been fully read.
You've heard the motion. As many as are of the opinion it shall prevail, say aye. Those to the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Reading is dispensed with. Senator from 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Photographers from the Missouri News Horizon have been given permission to take pictures in the Senate chamber today.
Thank you, Senator. Introduction of guests. Petitions, memorials, remonstrances. Resolutions. Concurrent resolutions. Senator from 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, Senate will go to the order of business of reports of standing committees.
Reports of standing committees.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Committee on Rules, Joint Rules, Resolutions, and Ethics has a report.
Send the committee report forward. Read that committee report.
Mr. President, your Committee on Rules, Joint Rules, Resolutions, and Ethics, to which was referred Senate Committee substitute for Senate Bill 230, begs leave to report it has examined the same and finds that the bill has been truly perfected and that the printed copies furnished the senators are correct. Respectfully, Senator Dempsey, Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, Senate of the Order of Business of Senate Bills for Perfection, the Informal Calendar, Senate Bill 320.
Senate Bills for Perfection, the Informal Calendar, Senate Bill 320. The Senator from 24th. Sir.
I have a substitute that I'd like to... Oh, I'm sorry. I ask that Senate Bill 320 be brought up before the body.
You've heard the motion. As many as are of the opinion it shall prevail, say aye. Those to the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill is before us, Senator.
Mr. President, I have a Senate substitute I'd like to ask back, take back.
Send the Senate substitute back to the Senator from the 23rd.
And I have a new 24th. Substitute in its place.
Very good. Send your new substitute forward. Senator, has it been distributed?
It has been distributed.
The reading of the new substitute will be waived. Move the adoption.
Very good. I'd just like to address the changes in the Senate
substitute. Senator, you need to move the adoption.
Oh, I move for the adoption of the Senate substitute. And what we did in this substitute is we originally introduced this bill earlier in the week. We had a few things that, some few issues that were brought forward that I think make great common sense. And what we did essentially is we focused in on the 17 and under respondents who... in their orders of protection and how those order protections would first be served, and then how they may be kept sealed to protect their identity in the future. So we made those changes. I think the bill is a better bill, and I would ask that the Senate substitute be adopted.
Thank you, Senator. Does any senator wish to be heard on the motion, Senator from 24th? Seeing none, Senator is recognized to close.
I close.
The senator renews his motion on adoption of the Senate substitute to the bill. As many as are of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye. Those to the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The substitute is adopted.
And again, this is a domestic violence bill, culmination of lots of efforts, lots of stakeholders. I think it makes protects the victims of domestic violence in a much more significant way. I think it makes those least in society, they'll receive those protections they most certainly deserve. And so I'm willing to take any questions on the Senate substitute in the bill.
And your motion is to perfect the bill as amended by the substitute.
Yeah, I move that the Senate Bill 320, the Senate substitute for Senate Bill 320 be perfected and an order printed.
Does any senator wish to be heard on that motion? Seeing none, the senator is recognized to close.
I close.
The senator renews his motion on perfection and printing of the bill as amended by the Senate substitute. As many as are of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye. Those to the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill is ordered, perfected, and printed. Thank you, Senator. Yes. For what purpose does Senator from Buchanan rise?
Mr. President, I request unanimous consent for the introduction of special bills.
Hearing no objection, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. To your left and my right, I have a couple of medical students visiting me today. Brett Haar, on your left, was an intern when I was a state rep in my office. And Nick Miller is a first-year student with him, and they're both from the Kansas City University of Medicine and Biosciences, and I would ask that they please rise and be recognized by the Senate.
Let's welcome the guests of the Senator from Buchanan, the doctors, to the Missouri Senate. Senator from the 23rd, is it your wish to remain on perfection?
Thank you, Mr. President. We'll stay on that calendar. Senate Bill 247.
Senate Bill 247. The senator from Johnson. Senator?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Mr. President. I move that Senate Bill 247 be taken up from the informal calendar.
You've heard the motion. As many as are of the opinion, it shall prevail. Say aye.
Aye.
Those to the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill is before us.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move the adoption of the Senate substitute. This is the foundation formula bill that we brought up a couple of weeks ago. And so we are going to bring it up again for some discussion today.
We need to hold it down so the senator can be heard on his bill.
Thank you, Mr. President. This is Senate Bill 247 is the foundation formula bill. And as we talked about a couple of weeks ago, with the foundation formula that was adopted in 2005, it worked very well when it's fully funded. However, when we came up with the foundation formula in 2005, we did not take into consideration if the foundation formula was not fully funded. And so that's why we're having some problems with the foundation formula. Basically, things are going in a situation right now that if we don't do something by 2013, what we will have is basically come to a cliff, and we will see that a lot of the hold harmless districts will not only increase in number, but also do well at the expense of some foundation formula districts. And so what this is designed to do is to put some predictability into the foundation formula, send a message to our school districts that we have made a decision, and so that school districts can make some plans for the future. I'll be glad to take in any comments on the bill.
Senator from the 15th.
To inquire, well, let me pick. There's so many people I want to ask questions with on this. The senator from the 24th.
Does the senator from the 24th yield for inquiry?
I yield.
He yields, you may inquire.
Thank you. Before we get in our inquiry, though, I want to point out to our left, is a superintendent, a friend of mine, Sarah Riss, from Webster Groves School District, that is here today joining us and would like for the Senate to make her feel welcome as she's here in this interesting debate. Mr. President?
That was an introduction. Let's welcome the guest of the senator from the 15th to the Missouri Senate.
You know, I think it's kind of interesting, and the good Lord works in strange ways. I didn't know that Sarah Riss was going to be up here today, and I also didn't know that the foundation formula was coming up today. But in this serendipitous moment, it gives us an opportunity to talk again about some of the inequities and the Band-Aid that we're trying to place on a larger problem with the formula. So, Senator, you and I have talked a lot about this. We've had some discussions with the senator from Johnson. Clearly, we're not even close to resolving what these issues are. And as we talked about maybe a month or so ago, we probably need to have more of a comprehensive discussion about the formula.
Well, and before I start, Senator, I too would like to stop and make an introduction. It just happens that Dr. Charles Penworthy from the Brentwood School District is here today, and I'd ask that the body make him welcome. So I need to seek... Well, good morning, Senator. It's interesting. We're down to our last 4 weeks from Thursday. Not that I'm counting the minutes. And it's extraordinary the amount of things we have left to do, but I'm confident we'll work hard and get all the things done and serve the good citizens of the state of Missouri. And I can understand the lack of willingness to contemplate what I suggested on this matter, which we talked about a few weeks ago, which is to stop at some point, beginning now and going forward in the future, to sit down and redo the funding formula. That my understanding, 1993 was we had a funding formula that was put into place, and then once again in 2005 it was redone. That was a 2.5-year process. It cost money, it cost time, it cost energy. I can imagine them when they finally dragged that new funding formula across the finish line, the whole group of people that were involved in it were completely exhausted and wanted nothing more to do with it. And there are some people that are here in this body today that were here then, and they know how difficult and exhaustive that whole process is. So I can appreciate the fact that they would not want to take that burden on again. But when we look at what that funding formula outlined as far as the future growth of revenues that the state would, the projected future growth of revenues of the state, and the commitment the state was willing to make to the funding of public schools, no one in their wildest dreams thought that we would enter into this period of economic duress that we've entered into, and no one thought that we'd see the tremendous decline in state revenues that we've seen over these past 3 or 4 years that really has made it impossible for us to fully fund the formula as had been outlined in the new funding formula. I think that to decide to change a funding formula in a single bill during the course of a few months in a single session, I just think it does a complete disservice to all those dedicated public servants that gave months and months and years of their time in 1992 and 1993 and 2004 and 2005 to get it done right.
Well, and to that point, Senator, to only deal with one particular aspect of the funding formula, to not really deal with the fact that we're counting kids in schools that don't, there are phantom children, they don't exist, to prop up numbers, or a number of exceptions that were built in, or the dollar, the modifier that takes into account the difference of what it costs to live in one part of the state versus the other. To pick this one to deal with, that the hold harmless districts would bear in a situation where it was never contemplated when the deal was struck. And in many ways, there's no way we would, if the provision to keep these schools held harmless wasn't in the foundation formula in 2005, there never would have been a bill. And so then now to pull that out when times are difficult is just, on a fairness level, is just inequitable. And, you know, to again put this in perspective, the age-old agreement was, to remind folks,
You said to these hold harmless districts, you're not going to get any new money. You're just simply not going to get any new money as we plug new money into formula districts. But here's the deal, hold harmless districts. We're not going to take any money away either, okay? You are held harmless. Well, now we're in a situation, we're in difficult budget times, where we're saying that isn't really the deal, okay? I know that's what we said 6 years ago, but times have changed, folks. And drastic times call for drastic measures, and we're going to single you out and pull you out of what brought you into the original formula. And it's unfair, and as you know, the districts that we represent fund their local schools to the tune of about 90 to 93% of all the funding per kid is paid by local taxpayers. Kirkwood, Webster, the areas that I represent, they get a couple hundred bucks a kid from the state, okay? And that was the deal. We understood that when the formula was drafted, but the understanding was you weren't going to reduce the level of state funding either. And here we are now in a situation where we don't even really need to deal with it this year, to be honest with you.
Thank you, Mr. President. I request unanimous consent to introduce a very special guest. Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to apologize to the senators in debate. I realize that what they are saying is important and needs to be said on the floor of the Senate. However, today we have perhaps one of the most important guests we have had or will have during my time of service. I believe in this chamber right now we have a future president of the United States of America. One day we'll all be going to him with our polished up resumes, asking for a place on the cabinet. Mr. President, Van McClure here from Springfield, Missouri, is the son of Kyle and Jennifer McClure. He is sharp, he is dapper, he can talk at the adult level about any topic you can think of and actually leave you having learned something. I'm grateful he's here. I ask that he be allowed to serve as page for the day and made very welcome.
Page for the day at compensation to be paid by the senator from Lawrence. And we're delighted to have him. Let's welcome the McClures to the Missouri Senate. Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. I request unanimous consent to introduce a very special guest.
Hearing no objection,
well,
proceed.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to introduce the fourth grade class from Immaculate Conception in the gallery today of Jefferson City. They are here with their teachers, Mrs. Cindy Walken, Miss Peggy Job, and Miss Ann Weber. Further, five of their classmates will, I ask that they serve as honorary pages for the day, and they are Andrew Bexton, Reagan Taggart, Abby Davis, Katie Wilson, and Allie Webb. I might add that Katie Wilson is the daughter of Mickey Wilson, Director of Legislative Oversight, and Allie is the daughter of Mark Webb, Assistant Director of House Research. I ask that these five students be made pages of the day to serve without compensation, and that the Immaculate Conception fourth grade class be made welcome.
The five young people will be made pages for the day. Will all the guests of the Senator from Cole please rise for recognition and a welcome by the Missouri Senate. Senators, resume.
To 11. 33.7 million, 46.6 million, 50.8 million, 54 million, 50 million, 60 million.
Formula.
Bingo. How about this one? 230,000, 321,000, 330,000, 337,000, 319,000, 346,000.
Hold harmless.
So what we want to do is we want to codify this system. You spoke before about the fact that this bill only addresses some aspects of the formula. My question would be, what would you expect? It took 2.5 years to get it right last time. So in 3 or 4 months, you're lucky if you can get to one or two issues. And my understanding is when the formula was redone in 05 and in 1993, all the stakeholders were brought into rooms. And we had to travel the state and hear testimony from all the people that would be impacted by this change, dramatic change. And yet, this time around, we decided we're going to pick two or three things and we're going to put it in the bill. We're not going to ask the stakeholders what they think. And we're going to extend this out to 2016.
Well, as I said, Sarah Riss is here today. In my neck of the woods, there's a great deal of pride that goes along with those school districts. And people, fiscally conservative people, will go to the polls and support the schools, whether it's a bond issue or it's the tax rate issue, to provide the appropriate student-to-teacher ratios, to have the facilities, to make sure that we're educating the next generation of doctors, engineers, lawyers, teachers. And there's a great amount of pride that goes with that. And we don't ask for much, actually. You know, there's not a lot. I don't represent a lot of, there aren't a lot of prisons in my district. There aren't a lot of state-run facilities. There aren't a lot of state buildings. These are people that go to work every day. They earn a living. They take care of their families. They live in that area. A lot of it has to do with the schools that are there. And they don't ask for much. But I'll tell you one thing that we ought to demand in this body and in the state is fairness. Fairness under the law, equity. As a lawyer, I believe in that strongly. And the process matters, okay? I don't like things that are result-oriented, where we're trying to get to a result, and then we figure out the math, you know, secondarily. And that's exactly what we're doing here. We're trying to get to a result, and we're pulling the rug out from underneath a deal that was done 6 years ago because it's convenient. Yeah. And I don't think that's a good way to address public policy.
Well, Senator, I'd go the other way. When you say that our districts don't ask anything or ask very little of the state, I would actually turn that around and say, let's contemplate what our districts actually provide the rest of the state. When you look at, you mentioned before that our percentage of funding formula dollars, our state revenue, education dollars that come into our districts is all, for the most part, single digits in terms of the percentage of the overall budget. And that's in the context of a $3 billion budget. Where's that $3 billion come from? And that money comes from Missouri state income taxes, Missouri state sales taxes. Our governor recently announced his 5-year economic plan, which I was brought up to be really afraid of 5-year and 10-year plans. That sounds very Eastern European to me. But he presented it. He chose to present it in the city of St. Louis County because he knows that represents 45%
yep.
of the economic activity in the state. So, the 45% of the economic activity that occurs in St. Louis City and St. Louis County—that's all money being sent right back down here. So, not only are we not asking for—we're asking for a very small percentage of it to come back. I would make the point, the case, that we're funding the rest of the school district. So what we've done is we have, our local communities have committed to multi-generational success, and what that means, they have committed to bond offerings, capital expenditures, rising tax rates, rising property, real estate taxes to support the schools. We see now in my districts, we've got parents coming together and actually raising money, which is more typical of a private institution. They're actually raising money to support specific expenditures.
Yeah.
And so, again, it's not that we're not asking for the state to send back a majority of what we send it. We're actually asking for them to this plan that you created in 2005 after 2.5 years of work with all the stakeholders involved. We're asking you to stick to that plan.
Well, what's the first rule? First, do no harm, right? And that's all we're saying. We're just saying we're not – actually, you and I and others, I think, that would have an opportunity – to chime in on this, aren't asking for anything different or new. We're just saying abide by the deal, okay? This is the deal, and let's abide by it. Let's be fair. And unless and until we have a more comprehensive discussion about what that formula looks like, don't just start pulling one side.
All other business will be suspended, and Senate substitute for Senate committee substitute for House committee substitute for House Bill number 163, having passed both branches of the General Assembly, will be read at length by the Secretary. If no objections are made, the bill will be signed to the end that it may become law. Secretary, please read the bill.
Truly agreed to and finally passed, Senate Substitute for Senate Committee Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bill 163, an act relating to unemployment compensation with an emergency clause.
No objections being made, the bill is so signed. Senator from the 15th, you may begin your discussion once again with the senator from the 24th.
Mr. President.
Senator from the 15th.
Inquire the senator from the 1st.
Senator from the 1st, do you yield?
Thank you, Mr. President. Gladly.
He does. You may proceed.
I am looking for, and I had it last time, the percentages of local funding and local effort that districts and the areas that we represent send to their local schools. And I'm not finding it in my file, but I know what they are. They're above 90%. You haven't had an opportunity, I don't think, to chime in on this. Just wanted to get your thoughts on this proposal of kind of reneging on a deal that was struck 6 years ago, and almost in a laser-like way, focusing on hold harmless districts, which I don't quite understand. I'm just curious what your thoughts were.
Well, I know that my constituents in the districts, many of the districts, of course, I've got, under the old definition, both hold harmless districts and formula districts. Mm-hmm. So, I hear from my superintendents on both sides. But quite frankly, thinking of those districts that, since what, 1993?
Yeah.
Have, been held harmless.
No new money.
No new money, from the state coming back to them. I can think of a district like the Lindbergh School District that is pretty much all in my Senate district. They have about 93% of their funding comes from local effort, right? From local property taxes.
Yeah.
The Melville School District, about 85% of their funding comes from local effort. Now, if the Band-Aid fix that we're discussing here today is going to further damage, those districts, as far as the commitment that was made to them, as you said, 6 years ago.
Three senators on the floor. The senator from Boone is seeking recognition for what purpose, sir? Can we get the senator from Boone's microphone turned on? Hearing no objection, sir, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, on my right here today is Dr. Michael Friedman. He's the medical director of the Surgery Center in Columbia. He's an anesthesiologist. He's the doctor of the day. His medical degree is from the University of Missouri. He trained at Barnes Jewish. He is here today to see the workings of the Senate and be our doctor of the day, and I'd ask that the body make him feel welcome.
We are delighted to welcome Dr. Friedman as our doctor of the day to the Missouri Senate. Resume, senators.
So, Senator, you're much more versed on what is actually trying to be accomplished with this bill. Could you maybe share that with me?
Sure. So the way the bill works principally is, it'd be instructive, I think, to talk about what happened last year. As you recall, last year, we didn't fully fund K-12. We kept education funding flat.
Flat.
And it wasn't contemplated in the old formula. What do you do when you actually don't fully fund it? What are the rules? And as I was educated last year, as the first time really dealing with the foundation formula as a state senator, there really were no rules. And we passed a supplemental budget last year that kept the old rules of engagement. We kept, so the reductions in funding took place on the formula districts because they've been receiving increased funding, and we kept the hold harmless districts flat. Well, the governor of the state of Missouri, who is not the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of the state of Missouri, decided in his infinite wisdom that what we had done was unconstitutional. So he ignored it. Now, the last time I checked, it's been a long time since I was in a civics class. That's not his job. We have three branches of government, and they all have separate dedicated roles. The governor of the state of Missouri does not rule on constitutional issues.
That gets a little fuzzy sometimes, though, Senator. In appropriations yesterday, and this is for the second year in a row, the judiciary has decided that it's the appropriator. And they came before the appropriations committee, and they lay out a plan to where we just go ahead and appropriate the governor's rec, and they'll decide where they're going to withhold their spending. So they're going to have kind of a self-imposed withhold, instead of the appropriators deciding this is what you're going to be appropriated, this is where you're going to be appropriated. So we've got that kind of funny business going on between, the other two branches. The executive, it sounds like, thinks he's the Supreme Court justice.
Yeah,
and then we got the Supreme Court, the judiciary, thinking they're the appropriators. So
right.
It seems there's a lot of that going on these days.
Well, and he's a good lawyer. He was the attorney general for 16 years, Is that how long he was a trainee? I mean, he's a very good lawyer, but he's not on the Supreme Court, last time I checked.
Right.
So it's not his job.
Right.
And I think we got to be very clear about what people's roles are. Otherwise, we start losing, I think, our identity as a well-defined democracy with institutions that matter. And really, those institutions are what, you know, when you're looking
A republic, by the way.
Yeah, a republic. Yeah. But when a new republic or democracy is starting out, you know, in the world, one of the things that's critical and hard to get to is respect for those institutions of government, to understand what their roles are, so that when there's a transition of power, you don't have a coup d'etat, you know, when one president leaves, the next one. I mean, to me, as an American, that is one of the greatest moments. Now, sometimes I'm a little happier or sad, depending on which president's coming in. But,
right.
But that moment when the president who had just been sworn in and the former president walk out, and one of them gets on the helicopter and leaves, that is a unique moment.
Yes.
In the world.
Right.
I mean, we take that for granted.
A peaceful transfer of
peaceful
power.
Peaceful transition of power,
right.
And we take that for granted. So these institutions of government, what their roles are really important. So last year when the governor did that, I thought that was, you know, it was ridiculous. But he got away with it. I think there have been some lawsuits instituted by some school districts who disagreed with the decision. I don't know what the status of that was. And DESE has gone along with it. DESE believes that as an agency, they have a lot of power, and they do in many ways, and in many ways it's unchecked. And I think that's our role as a legislature. But they basically said, you know what, since there aren't any rules about what we do when it's not fully funded, we're going to withhold equally. People are going to share the cuts equally. Well, to the guy on the street, not understanding the context of in which the deal, that sounds fine, right? Until you put it in perspective, well, all these hold harmless districts have never gotten any new money.
Right.
And the formula districts have gotten millions and millions and millions of dollars as we plug new monies in. And that's fine. That's what we ought to do. You know, we made that deal. That's an appropriate function of government to fund schools. But when you pull out, you know, on a technicality, you start, targeting particular districts. It was startling to me. And I tell you what was more startling. And
just to jump in here, the concept they're trying to put forth is, okay, revenues are down, everybody should share in the pain,
right?
Right. But what they leave out of that equation is that our districts that have been relying, you know, almost solely,
yep,
on the local contribution through property taxes, they've been sharing the pain since 1993.
Right.
Right?
Right.
I mean, they've been sharing the pain.
Yeah.
Right. And so have the taxpayers in our district,
yeah,
by supporting those, you know, supporting their districts,
yeah,
you know, with property taxes. So they, like you say, they've been part of the equation all the way through. You know, take our tax dollars to Jeff City and send them around the state.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what this is.
That's what happens.
I mean, this is a redistribution.
Right.
Of wealth.
Okay? Exactly.
But for education, we say that is, you know, that is an appropriate.
It's our constitutional
exactly.
duty. Right.
And so nobody, I don't think anybody's arguing that, but I will say, one of the more startling moments, not to overstate this too much, last year, or my tenure as a senator, this being the third session, was when the former pro tem, Charlie Shields, God love him, brought out this...
Somebody has to.
Yeah, right. Brought out this provision where there was now a new classification of school districts, and there were 16 of them.
Yeah. What was that again?
Super hold harmless district.
The or, super hold harmless
or I,
district.
Super duper hold
was
harmless.
Was it super duper?
It may have been.
Okay.
16 districts pulled out because they were considered rich districts, okay?
Right.
And we had colleagues, conservative colleagues, voting to add, not just share it equally, but an additional surcharge on those districts because they were rich districts. It's like driving down the street, okay, and you see the nicest house, and that's the one you're going to break into because it's the nicest house, and you get away with it.
Right.
I mean,
right.
It's nuts. And so we had these 16 districts. Half of them, I think, were in St. Louis County. The center from the 8th, I think, had some, and there were some other districts that were included. But we had an additional. Now, it didn't happen. It we got it pulled out. But the idea.
Thanks to you, Senator.
Well, and you.
Yeah, yeah.
We, and the Senator from the 7th,
right.
I think, had an amendment last year on it, too. She deserves credit on that as well. Because it's just not fair. You know, it's just, there's no equitable way to describe that. And so We got to a point last year where we actually said, okay, we're willing to work on this, and the House Education Chairman at the end of the year pulled that provision out. And so now here we are. You know, we're dealing with this issue again where we're not going to probably fully fund the foundation formula. And we're dealing with, what do we do? We're fighting like heck. You're on the Appropriations Committee to provide as much funding for education as possible. And we're in a situation now where we're dealing with, well, what do you do? Because we're not hitting those targets. The statute is unclear. What do you do when you're not fully funding? And here we go again. And I have a lot of respect for the senator from Johnson, but I disagree with this solution. It is a Band-Aid to a much larger problem that we got to have the courage and political will to address. It's going to take a lot of time. It's not easy. It's uncomfortable. But if we're going to do it right, we got to spend the time. And we don't have to do it this year. You know, the cliff that everybody's referring to is in 2013, not 2012.
Right. If I could interject, I think that it is the will of this body that education be our top priority. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've been serving in the General Assembly for 9 years, and we all talk about it. But I do believe that our colleagues are sincere. You know, when they say that education, not only do we have the constitutional direction, you know, to fund education at a certain level, okay? But I think that we agree that it addresses many of our ills,
yeah,
if we provide, you know, a quality education to Missouri children. But the thing that's troubling to me, and I say this every year when we go through the appropriations process, is that when I came into the General Assembly, that if you looked at globally at our budget and you saw, okay, well, how do you define the priorities of the General Assembly? Well, where do they spend the people's money?
Right.
I think that's a good measure, you know, of what your priorities are, right? So when I came into the General Assembly, and these are rough numbers, and I'm doing it by memory, within our budget, what we appropriated for K through 12 education and what we appropriated for the social services were roughly at about the same level.
Yeah.
Okay, this is my ninth year in the General Assembly, so 9 years ago. You know what that is today, Senator, on the bills that just passed out of appropriations yesterday?
What's that?
Well, the education funding now is still around $5 billion, okay? And, it was in that neighborhood, you know, when I started, you know, 8 years ago. It might have been a little less, mm-hmm, okay? And the social service has skyrocketed to over $8 billion, over $8 billion. And that doesn't include the federal food stamp program, which is another $1.3 billion. So we're actually in Missouri, we're spending over $9 billion on social services, yet education funding is flat.
Right.
And I think that's troubling.
Right.
You know, what is our priority?
Yeah, and I think, I saw a statistic that's actually troubling. We have 6 million Missourians in the state approximately.
Right.
Almost a million people on food stamps.
Yes.
That is a concern, and I think shines a light on the fact that, we've got hopefully brighter days are ahead, but we gotta get people back to work.
That solves a lot of problems.
It does.
I mean, when we had 4% unemployment in the state, you know, we were talking about having surpluses. We did have surpluses.
Remember that. I
wasn't. Okay, you weren't here. Okay, all
I'm
right.
waiting for the day
yeah.
where we actually, you know, have some positive revenue growth. But, you know, getting back to the formula, it's just troubling to me that we're singling out, and I'm not sure what the rationale is. Maybe it's because there's not as many hold harmless districts, and it's easier, it's deemed politically more expedient to focus on the hold harmless districts. But from my perspective, it doesn't have much to do necessarily with the dollars and cents of it. It is a fairness issue. It's a process issue. You know,
sure.
you can't go back in time and because the and I wasn't here at the time, but I'm sure, quite sure. And I've talked to people that the foundation formula the deal would not have been struck if you had this provision in there that hold harmless districts were going to take cuts, even though they weren't getting any new money. It just doesn't make any sense.
Right.
And I know that in Senator from Johnson's bill, he has a provision in there that if there is new money, the hold harmless districts. Well, let's get real here. We're not going to overfund the foundation formula in the next few years. It's just not going to happen.
No.
And so Jesse has made this decision that they're going to, and with no explanation, really, but they just want to, the whole harmless districts, I think, are in the crosshairs, and I'm not exactly sure why. There's been really no meaningful dialogue to deal with that long term.
You know, interesting point that you brought up when you first got the floor. You said you were surprised about this bill coming up today.
Yeah.
Well, that leads me to think, has there not been any movement from the senator from Johnson as far as being able to sit down and maybe talk through this with you?
Because, well, no, we have, to his credit, we spoke yesterday about it.
Okay.
And I told him, I said, look, I want to work with you, Senator, because I do have a lot of respect for him personally. And I know he has a difficult job with regard to this.
Right.
He's the chairman of that committee. But I can't. What do you want me to do here?
Yeah. This is another example, Senator. I mean, I know that we, I've been certainly involved in some controversial, things, as far as slowing things down, last number of weeks, and took a lot of heat from the media and from people across the state. But this is another example where the purpose of this body and the way it was designed is to slow down the tyranny of the majority. Okay? So, as you mentioned earlier, if there are amongst this body our colleagues that make up a greater number that represent, formula schools rather than hold harmless schools, they'd love to just pass this thing right through. Right?
But that's not
what we're elected to do. We're elected to protect our taxpayers, our constituents, and you know what? Our school districts, right? And this is the purpose of us being able to stand up and talk about things, and really force the hand of those that would just run over the top, of those that are in the minority, right? And in this case, we're in the minority, right?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of what goes on here day to day isn't necessarily partisan.
Right.
A lot of what goes on here is there's interesting coalitions and alliances, and that's how it's designed. That's how it should work.
Exactly.
There are the fundamental issue, and what I want to be clear about with whoever is listening, the five people on the internet. But what I want to be clear about is it's not that the whole harmless districts would get less money. That's really not my objection. My objection is that the process matters. There was a deal. We're pulling out one part of it. We're not looking at comprehensively. We're not looking at all of the issues.
Three senators on the floor. The senator from Boone, for what purpose are you seeking recognition?
To seek unanimous consent to introduce some very special guests.
Hearing no objection, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Over on my right today, we've got students, fourth grade students from the Windsor Street Montessori School in Columbia. We were just having a nice discussion out in the gallery about the operation of the Senate and how it compares to the House. They're here to learn about state government, and I'd ask the body make them feel welcome today.
Would the Senate please welcome the guest from Boone County? Thank you for visiting the Senate. We hope you learn a lot on your visit today. Senators, you may proceed. Senator from the 15th, for what purpose of seeking recognition?
To inquire the senator from the 7th district.
Senator from the 7th.
There's a sniper. There's a sniper.
The senator from the 7th.
President.
Senator from the 15th.
Inquire the senator from the 24th district in St. Louis County.
Senator from the 24th, would you yield to an inquiry?
I yield.
He does. Proceed.
Thank you.
I try to be a warm, feeling, caring guy, but I'll admit it, numbers are really important to me. I'm logical, too, so numbers help me find logic. I want to know the formula. The formula, funding formula. Here's some more numbers I find very, very interesting. Fiscal year 07, we had whole harmless districts, we had formula districts. Fiscal year 07 is interesting. The total funding statewide for whole harmless districts in fiscal year 07 was $1,392,885. In that exact same year, the formula district funding was $1,333,955,059. So let's see what happened over the next four fiscal years to the hold harmless districts. And these are statewide hold harmless districts. So we went from $1.3 billion to so fiscal year 08 was $1,333,138,298. So that was a decrease of almost $60 million.
Mm-hmm.
The next fiscal year was $1,210,708,146. Now, 08 to 09, we're still growing our state revenue. We're still growing our budget, and the whole homeless districts just took a $120 million decrease in their funding.
Now, why were they getting a decrease? Because of the local effort, correct?
I mean, Well, this is the formula. This is the formula kicking in. Now, also, I know for a fact in three of my school districts, during that period of 07, 08, 09, when they saw them responding to the change in their formula, and they themselves started to understand what was going to occur, they actually, the citizens of those communities stepped up. Some increased their tax rates. Some agreed to bond offerings. They expanded. My personal school district has grown by 9% in 10 years, even though it's landlocked. Let's see what happened in fiscal year 10 for the hold harmless districts. Well, they're down to $1,003,287,715. So they're still above the billion mark, but fiscal year 11 projected numbers for the hold harmless districts, and this is with the formula as it exists today, and what we're asking to happen in this session of this General Assembly is to keep it the way it is
right
today. In fiscal year 11, the projected numbers is $893,929,920. So it goes from $1.392 billion to $0.893 billion. So what's going on in the formula districts? So I mentioned before that in 07 they started at $1.33 billion. The next year was $1.499 billion. Then $1.738 billion, and then in 2010, $2.001 billion, and in fiscal year 11, the projected numbers is $2.108 billion. So they will have gone from $1.33 billion to $2.108 billion, and they want to change the formula.
Why?
It's in their interest.
Right. Right.
It's in their interest.
And I'll tell you, there's a lot of other issues. I'll tell you, there's in the formula, there's a local effort issue. There's a true cost of living with the dollar value modifier issue. There's an issue with valuation. There's an issue with consolidation. There's an issue with small schools. There's an issue with counting the number of kids that are actually in the classroom. But we're not dealing with any of that stuff. You know? We don't want to talk about that.
Oh, so with your question, I mean, there's two conversations going on around education in this building. Actually, there was a big conversation. This conversation is not too loud. The conversation surrounding the funding from the fix has kind of been below the surface.
Right.
And, you know, it's interesting. The funding formula, that's a big deal, usually. It's 2 or 3 years of hard work and task force and stakeholders and input and negotiation and back and forth and first draft and second draft and third draft. It usually makes a lot of noise around the state when we decide to change the funding formula. But this year, it's been real quiet. Other than this bill and the time you and I spent on the floor and the opportunity to discuss it today, it really hasn't been discussed that much.
Well, it's death by a thousand little paper cuts, I think. And at some point, it's just not even worth, you know, the couple hundred bucks you get per kid from the state for Kirkwood. And it's,
yeah, what does it take? What would it take our district just to leave the system?
That is an option.
You know, do we?
That is an
option. Because it's funny, I got some other interesting numbers and things like, Missouri state income tax numbers.
I think the senator from first wants to introduce them. Yes.
Three senators on the floor. For what purpose are you seeking recognition, Senator from the first?
Thank you, Mr. President. If I could seek unanimous consent to introduce some very special guests
hearing
that are
no
visiting
objection.
The Capitol.
Hearing no objection, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Over to my left and to your right, Mr. President, we have visiting the Capitol today two women veterans that are in support of naming the new bridge in St. Louis, the Women's Veterans Memorial Bridge. And with us today Colonel Constant Edwards, PhD, who served 33 years of active and reserve duty in the U.S. Army Nurse Corps, and one of only 7,500 women veterans who served in Vietnam. And then we have Rochelle Crump, who served in the Women's Army Corps, served 21 years with the VA, and is the current president of the National Women's Veterans United, former assistant director of the Illinois Department of Veterans Affairs, and is the first female appointed to the executive staff in Illinois since 1945. And what an honor it is for us to have them visiting our capital here in Jefferson City today. I wish the body would make them feel very welcome.
Well, the guests of the Senator from the First, thank you very much for your service, and welcome to the Missouri Capitol. Senator, you may proceed.
I think Gary Nadler isn't around when we're naming bridges. That's all I'm saying. Senator,
it's interesting things between our conversation a few weeks ago and our conversation now, and alluding a little bit to what Senator Lemke had to say. When I talked before about Senator from the First,
the First Senator, as he likes to be referred to.
First Senator. It's interesting. I talked before a little bit about the fact that we receive so very little from the state, our districts, and this idea that we generate so very much that the state then is able to use for whatever purposes it deems important. I've got some interesting numbers. These are last fiscal year Missouri state income taxes paid by state senate district.
I'm interested.
My state senate district paid $498 million in state income tax last year.
$498 million.
And the total revenue through state income taxes was $3.3 billion. So $498 million came from my district. And when you look at all of the St. Louis area.
What's the 15th before you go there? What's the 15th?
Well, the 15th is $85.9 million. But with your work, you being on the Economic Development Committee, now I know that number will certainly improve. So of a $3.3 billion in revenue, almost $1.47 billion came from the St. Louis area. And, you know, this isn't just a St. Louis area thing. It's a Kansas City suburban area as well. Senator from the 10th is very proud to represent the second most highest state income tax district. $368 million of state income tax were generated in that district.
Well, yeah.
When you add the St. Louis City County, Kansas City City County, of the $3.3 billion in state income tax revenues, $2.1 billion come from those areas. So it's $1.2 billion are generated by all the other parts of the state outside of a 60-mile radius of the two urban centers. We're not asking for people to send the money back. We're asking for the formula to exist the way it exists today.
Leave us alone.
And go forward.
Right?
Exactly.
Don't.
And here's another thing too. And I want to speak. This is part of the Center of the First observations. And I'm speaking specifically to those folks back home, and to our newly elected St. Louis County Assessor. One of the things that was referred to by both the majority as well as the dissenting Supreme Court decision concerning the formula was this concept of the state not having a unified process of assessing property values. St. Louis County, we use this concept certificate of value. Most of the rest of the state use assessed value. The fact that we actually even have a formula that derives its inputs from different processes of creating a method for assessing the value. I mean, I'm stumbling here, let me be clear. The philosophy behind the formula is who can afford to take care of themselves and who can't. And the way they've decided to assess that is not by income or economic activity or local GDP. They've said, let's look at the value of their properties. Which is actually kind of interesting concept to think that there's an assessed value for every single square inch of the state of Missouri, with the exception of government land. So, but what they do is they say, okay, go tell us what your properties are worth. And most of the state says, well, here's our approach to telling you what our properties are worth. And you look at it on the surface and you say, oh, that's interesting. So you've got 140 acres and you've got land that you produce on. You've got a 4,000 square foot house. And God, that's only worth enough to generate $1,000 in local real estate taxes? Okay, well, that's how you do it. That's your assessed value. In St. Louis, we tie more than just our school taxes to our property values. And I would suggest that the method that we use, certificate of value, if we were to use the assessed process, you would see a dramatic decline in our real estate property valuations. And for our newly elected St. Louis County Assessor, who on the surface might think, well, this isn't such a good idea. If I lower the value of our properties in St. Louis County, he's thinking to himself, well, gosh, there's all these other things that are tied to the value of the properties that their revenues would go down. I ask him to think further still. Let's think about this first from the perspective of the funding formula. So if the rest of Missouri assesses their property values a certain level, low, and St. Louis County assesses them at a higher value, and when we take the combined number and say, well, what's the value of all the properties in the state of Missouri, we get our number, and we go, oh my gosh, look at how wealthy these people are. Well, if we use the same process that they used, the total value of all the property would be less, and our percentage of that total value would be more. So it's interesting.
We are one of the few states.
There's a funding formula fix out there that no one in this room is going to like the answer, which is if our assessor changes the process of going from certificate of value to assessed value, okay, then suddenly, the way the formula is written today, we're not so able to fund ourselves. And our percentage, our numbers have to go up.
Well, and we're one of the few states, too, that does not have a uniform, whether it's certificate of value or assessed, one of the few states that has this.
But I want to keep going on this, because this is I found this so interesting, because to center from the first point, and he looked at education versus social spending, and I think a big part of the increase in social spending comes from the increase in Medicaid cost. And when I actually drilled, I mean, and I'll look at, I'm going to be a person who, we as a government need to provide a very strong safety net, a sound safety net, safety net that's there to catch you when you fall, but not hold you up. Okay, so I think that's where the Senate and the First Amendment might be on exactly the same page, which is too very often we create a safety net that really it takes the place of people being more self-reliant, and we prop people up. I think that gets lost in the debate. And it's important that we have an extremely strong safety net. Now, let's keep going on this. What we're doing right now is the St. Louis County citizens are essentially paying for their own education. They're sending billions of dollars to the state to pay for the rest of the state's education. And if you look at in the state, it's in the urban and suburban centers. Where are the poorest of the poor? Where are the neediest of the needy? Where are the most handicapped, the most severely disabled people? Where do they concentrate their populations? It's in and around the urban and suburban areas.
And let me, I don't want to get you off track, but to that point, we then tax ourselves for a lot of those services that come from local taxpayers, special school district. A lot of the mental health, a lot of the things that we do in St. Louis City and St. Louis County are local dollars, again. And anyway, go ahead.
Even the dollars that we send here, everyone says, oh, education's a priority. Well, no disagreement, education's a priority. We spend $3 billion in education out of this budget, but we're spending over $1 billion in the whole homeless districts on their own personal budgets.
Yeah.
Even a greater commitment. But I think what happens down here is the safety net, the net that needs to be strong enough to catch people, to catch those that no one's going to want to catch. You know, adult disabled, low-income Alzheimer's, no one wants to catch these people in the private sector. I'm sorry to say that. I'm very involved in the not-for-profit world, and it's very hard. There's so many, you know, there's 10,000 registered not-for-profits in the state, and it's so hard to get people to rally around causes that aren't warm and fuzzy, quite
right.
frankly.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, you're right.
So what happens here is that we stand up and we say, oh, we're all for education, we're all for taking care of people. But when it comes time to, as Senator first talked about, where's the money go? The money to touch education funding is a third rail in this state. But to take money away from an adult disabled person, that's okay.
Well, and you know what I do, and I know we've had this conversation before as we serve on the health committee. Like I said, I don't have state-run facilities in my district. I'm not protecting those parochial interests when I advocate to the chairman of the Appropriations Committee. You know what I advocate for? Let's reduce the waiting list for those people needing services, those with severe disabilities, because that's what I believe in.
Senator, what you and I have been blessed in our lifetimes, and we share this along with the floor speakers, we've had the benefit of an education, the Jesuit-provided education. St. Francis Ignatius of Loyola is their founding member, and if you ever have a chance, the next time you read his spiritual exegesis, it's one of the things I took from that going into public service was the message he had for those in power, the message he had for those who represent others, was to make no decision without first considering the least in society.
To be men for others.
And women for others, but specific to us as elected officials, it's to make no decision without first considering the perspective of those least in society. And when I see our focus on that group, I'm delighted when I see it. We heard some testimony in Health Committee about a bill the senior senator from St. Charles introduced about helping that, in my mind, the least in society.
Yeah.
They are adult, mentally challenged adults that, if not for their family, who knows, they'd be on the street somewhere. And we asked this question, how many are on the waiting list? And the answer was 3,000 people are on the waiting list. And to get into a community service center. And we asked the next question, well, what would it cost to get them off the waiting list? They said it would cost $20 million. We're going to spend $3.2 billion on K-12 public school education. The whole harmless district spend almost a third more on that with local taxing and funding. 25% of our families in the state of Missouri choose to not access the public school system. They pay for school themselves. There's all this money going to education, and yet we have 3,000 adult, mentally challenged people who are a burden beyond compared to their families, who we can't fund.
And I'll tell you that that is something that we need to continue to fight for. It was a fight that we had last year on the on the autism legislation. But for those folks, particularly with those severe challenges, as they get older, they're adults, and my son, for example, he may be my size someday, and there are different challenges, and those are the things that I think we've got an opportunity together and with others to advocate for. It's interesting, since evidently we're spending some time on this bill, we could talk about anything. We're both educated, Jesuit educated, and what I find remarkable about that particular order is that in a time in which many of the orders we're talking about in the 16th century, when many orders were retreating into monasteries and doing good work, the Jesuits went out. They went out into the world. They went to Asia. They were the first sort of Westerners in Asia. They were reaching out and helping people. And in many ways, as I reflect on my life, that experience I had taught me what was really important, and the idea of being involved, and the idea of things larger than yourself, and in many ways inspired, and we've had this conversation before, as you consider public service, I'm very happy being a lawyer, and as I'm at a good law firm, and I'm very happy, but there's the magis there's the more,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that order led the way, and I am eternally grateful for the continued spiritual advice that I
right.
get from those folks, and I know that one of the things that was great, okay, and you ought to frame this, when you ran, and you got the endorsement from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, they quoted in your endorsement a quote from
St. Ignatius
Loyola, and
yeah.
I think that is great, and I you ought to cherish that. And have
yeah, that's
it on your
that
wall.
Was that's the highlight of that. Let me tell you, this is great. It's interesting, you know, being in our 13th or 14th week, that certain topics get a certain amount of time, and other this one looks like it's going to get a certain amount more. So, since we have the floor, I have the floor, and I'm going to let's talk. I'd like to talk right now to St. Louis City, St. Louis County, which clearly is at it's easily bipartisan, and one could say, given essentially single-party rule in the city since 1949, and single-party rule at the county executive office for the last 25 years, one might say it's a little bit left of center, okay? And let's talk as a community of our path forward in resolving this situation, with the understanding being that we have this relationship with the state in terms of what they do or don't do for education funding, but we also have this education with the state in terms of what funding we get from them specific to taking care of those least in society. And I think we're carrying lots of financial loads, but I think when that decision to send money to education at the expense of social services, well, those people end up in our part of the state, and we have to take care of them locally. Here's a new path. Let's reassess. Let's do this. Let's assess our properties. I mean, there's two ways you can go. I can sit here and try to convince everybody else in the state to assess their properties the way we do. Not going to happen. Not going to happen. The rest of the state is not going to go from assessed value to certificate of value, because that would result in higher assessed values, higher local property taxes, less a percentage of the total funding pie. So let's go that way. Let's go from certificate of value to assessed value. Let's lower our property taxes all around the city and the county. Now, I think my friends back home that are left of center say, well, what are you doing? Because all of our tax rates, all these things are tied to property. Because when I get my property tax bill, it's amazing what I'm paying for. Zoo district, community college, all these different things. Okay, well, let's step back and let's go to each of those things in one at a time.
I don't think St. Charles wants to be in the zoo district, by the way.
Let's go back one at a time, and let's go through them and then say, okay, Leduce School District, okay, Brentwood School District, here's what just happened. You got your property taxes are now assessed at a lower value. This is the rationale behind why we need to increase your tax rate, and let's just do it right, you know, and there's something that's going to happen when we do that. First of all, we're going to get more money back from the state, because our percentage of the total value will now be a higher percentage because we're assessing ourselves the same way they assess themselves. So we're going to get millions of dollars more from the state that we're not getting now, and then we can prioritize what it is that we want to tax ourselves to do. And look, in my part of town, when a school district makes their case, the community stands up, supports it, gets behind it, and we go from there. And I'm thinking out loud the things that we could do with this new reality. We should, as a community, stop and say, well, where are the poorest of the poor? How are they being served? We've got lots of local charity, but we've got all kinds of room now. There's all this money we used to send to the state to help pay for their schools that's not going down there anymore. It's so silly that it's just a simple little mechanism. You know what? Let's assess our properties the way they assess our properties, and boom.
Well, and then I'll tell you what, if we're gonna start, and nobody wants to talk about those tough issues, but if we're going to do that, why not truly gauge? You're a numbers guy in your world. Why not truly gauge the difference between what it costs
okay.
to live in one particular area or another? Well, no, wait a minute. We don't want to do that. That'll mess up the numbers. Well, I mean, or what are we doing here? You know?
Three senators on the floor. The senator from the 18th. What purpose is he seeking recognition?
Mr. President, I seek unanimous consent to introduce a very special group.
Please proceed. Hearing no objection, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Up to my right and your left, Mr. President, is the St. Joseph Catholic School from Martinsburg. With them today is the teacher Michelle Holmes and the wife of Representative Jay Houghton. And I would like the body to make them feel welcome.
Well, would the guests from the Senator from Lewis please stand and be recognized and welcome to the Missouri Senate. Enjoy your visit today. Senators, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Okay, Senator, 313, 424, 426, these are all thousands, 421, 351, 366.
Hold harmless.
God, you're so good. So good.
You know, I actually am a decent Jeopardy player, too.
13.7, 17, 20.3, 21.9, 21.8, 27.3.
Hold harmless.
God, it's amazing.
You know, and while we're on this, you know, you rattled off the numbers. I actually never heard those numbers by Senate district as far as income taxes paid. You know, we're going to hopefully have the opportunity to deal with some of these issues down the road, too. And as you know, on that committee, the Economic Development Committee, we got to start talking also about growing the pie. And we do have two major employment areas where a lot of those jobs are created. Now, we need to start talking about, I think, at some point, how do we change the trajectory of our state's economy so that we actually have more resources to plug in so we're not talking about these issues? We can fully fund the foundation formula. And that's all part of this discussion, too. But as we're dealing specifically with the foundation formula, what I don't actually find our position controversial at all. All we're saying is, look, just you got to keep the deal until we're going to actually spend the time. And believe me, we got a lot of great resources. The Senator from Johnson is a smart guy,
yep.
Good chairman, dresses impeccably, but for when he wears the red sport coat. he kind of looks like Ronald McDonald, I would argue, but when he's wearing the red sport coat, sorry. We have a guy over there, Don, the bearded man. Well, the Minority Caucus does, but I mean, his brain is enormous. Okay, he knows the foundation formula backwards and forwards. We got a lot of resources we can employ here to actually do this thing the right way, as opposed to throwing down a substitute, putting a band-aid
right
on a much larger issue.
And I think you're right about that. But I, in just having conversations with people like Don and others that have had this experience in the formula and really spending a certain amount of time, contemplate, I think. I think we need to redo how we do assessments. I think that no matter what we do, when we redo the funding formula, because that time will eventually come, is that as long as we are allowing the rest of the state to point to us to say that you have so much more value of your property, so much more of a capacity to pay, which actually is interesting. This whole idea of the ability to pay, that wasn't always the way the formula was done.
Right.
Okay, so the formula that was crafted in 1993 sounds a heck of a lot. That's okay, heck's okay. Heck, okay. Okay. I almost said something that wasn't the right. The 1993 plan, you know, it's interesting because,
by the way, it is the president that rules on those issues.
Oh yeah, right. the 1993 plan, which was crafted by Democratic majorities, right? And who was the governor in 1993?
That was Governor Mel Carnahan.
Elected
in 1993.
He's
Bill Webster.
So Democrats, right? And that plan, you know, that plan looks a lot like a plan that a conservative Republican would normally craft. That plan, the spirit of that plan said, hey, you want money from the state? Get in the game. Show us your local commitment. You know, you fund your schools, we'll fund your schools. That was the game plan. And guess what happened to all of our school districts and districts in out in West County? And they took the state up on that. And they committed. And that's when I talk about successful public schools are multi-generational commitments. And in those schools looked at the funding formula in 1983 and said, we will make the multi-generational commitment to success, and we will fund ourselves, we will tax ourselves, we will bond ourselves. And the way the formula was structured was that the state money would then be in some proportion to local commitment. Interesting. To local support.
Right.
The more you did it yourself, the more then that you got from the state. Now, it's interesting when they changed the rules in 05, they stopped and they go, oh my gosh, look at how much more these other parts of the state are. Look at the valuations of their properties. Now, granted, I think the process we use inflates our value. And if we use the other process, it would decrease our valuations. But why would anyone be surprised that this was the outcome? What is it that makes a local community a place that people want to go and live and be a part of and to buy the home and wait for the next home to come market and build every home they could possibly build? It's this local commitment to success, the multi-generational commitment to success. I hear in this room over and over again, the most important thing the state of Missouri can do is allocate its resources to education. Well, that's what every single one of those school districts committed to doing in the early 90s was to allocate their personal resources to education. Local community joined side by side with the districts. They allocated their local resources, and surprise of all surprises, 15 years later, their property values were higher than other parts of the state that didn't take on the same commitment. And then they say, well, time to change the rules.
But you know what? And what's interesting now is the basic formula factors after that happened, after people made that commitment, is you've got the weighted average daily attendance times the state adequacy target times the dollar value modifier minus subtract the local effort out.
Yes. So that okay. was the, and that's the important thing for everyone back home to understand, is that you got trapped. You got sucked in. They said, hey, local community, get involved, spend some money, tax yourself, build some schools. You know, another interesting thing I hear over and over again in the public school, in all education schools, but I hear it over and over again more explicitly in public school circles, is pre-K has got to be a commitment we have to make. We've got to make a commitment to pre-K that, you know, we spend, a kid that isn't ready to go at age 5 or 6, we spend so much more money in 16, 17 and beyond, and some percentage of these kids end up incarcerated and the cost of the state. Well, what do our districts all have in common? They stepped out and made that commitment. So in some cases, years ago, again out of their own pocket, again out of their own resources.
So what you're saying, Senator, is that the carrot's put out there, right? And then once they get the rug is pulled out, okay? And in many ways, when they redid the formula in 2005, now in many ways what we're saying is we had the deal,
yeah.
Okay, that you're not going to get any more money, you're not going to get any less money, but now that we have less money as a state, we're pulling the rug out again.
It's amazing the analogies here, because so, you know, the Reagan Revolution, with respect to tax code, the Reagan Revolution that actually historians from both sides now know that it worked. What we did is we created a system, a mechanism, a tax system that incented people to go out and to work harder and to grow their businesses and to keep a bigger portion of their success. Because that was the 1982 tax law changes, and the next 17, 18 years we had unparalleled economic growth, standard of living rose. Okay. So that's a conservative principle. That's like, hey, I mean, that's the guy, right? And his ideas were the ideas. It's interesting that a Democratic majority, the Democratic governor, initiated a plan in 1993 called the funding formula that looks a heck of a lot like that.
Yeah. And then what happened when the Republicans are in charge, right?
So in 2005, yeah, I guess that is the case, right? They say, it's very analogous. They say, okay, gosh, the values of your properties have really risen a lot in these last 15 or 20 years. And my reaction is, well, no kidding. The system incented it. It incented local participation. It incented people to be committed. It created a school system that people wanted to be a part of, that moved into, that drove the values of those properties higher and higher. Okay, so they say, okay, so this is a system, and now the wealthiest of the wealthy districts, let's stop here and say the wealthiest of the wealthy districts, they need to pay more towards everybody else's education. That they've been so successful in driving up the valuations of their properties, and we're going to create a system that says those that have the most valuations should put the most into the pie, take the least back. Well, I don't get that. We as a conservative movement have this ongoing debate about income redistribution, taxing the wealthiest. We defend that over and over and over again. It's a core principle. And that, yet, that's exactly what this system does. This system says, gosh, you know that you pay for our schools? Those who have the most valuation, the most assessed valuation, they should pay for our schools.
And what I would say to my colleagues on this particular issue, and if anybody's listening in my office, I have a number of amendments that I do not have in my folder that I'd like to have sent over, because we haven't even started dealing with the amendments on this. But what I would ask is not to listen to the superintendent that calls and says yay or nay, okay, or that bottom line number, but to really look at this thing as how it has evolved and what's equitable, okay? Because I think we're put in a unique position. There's only 34 of us representing 6 million people. It is an incredibly humbling honor for us to do. And I think we have a responsibility to do the right thing, to look at this thing in fairness, to understand the process, how we got here, everything in context. And, you know, just because you get a couple calls from your superintendent that says, oh, no, this isn't good for us because we're going to, well, you know what? At some point, there's a higher level, there's a higher principle here. And what's fair?
Senator, I would suggest that it's time for the leaders in St. Louis City and St. Louis County, from both parties, both in government, in education, in positions of leadership in the community, to stop and to recognize what the formula does, how, and again, I thank God that, you know, you, through your efforts, we've got a elected county assessor. I think that I will not understand if that newly elected assessor does not take up this challenge to reassess, to change this process of assessment, to conform with the rest of the state. I understand that the knee-jerk reaction is, oh my gosh, you just lowered everyone's assessed values of their homes. That's going to be this huge challenge. Well, you know what? I know we can handle it. As a local community, we've always risen up and done what we need to do locally, especially when it comes to education. So we put down that challenge, and, you know, it just so happens that the elected county assessor is a Democrat, and I think in this instance, it needs to be a bipartisan effort, and I'd ask him to lead this effort to change our method of assessment, to conform. So we, St. Louis City and St. Louis County, would impose a statewide standard that we as a state have never certainly fulfilled. And in both the supporting and dissenting opinion, mentioned the fact that that too is a constitutional obligation we're not fulfilling.
Yeah, there are four counties that have certificate of value.
So let's change our process. Let's go to their process, right? And let's go to local communities and say, here's what this means. Here's where we're going to have to change our tax rates on school districts. We have to change tax rates on other things. Anything that we base our tax rates on valuations. But then and only then will our relationship with the rest of the state be in sync. And I have to tell you, the fact that we have not done this, everybody that's not part of St. Louis City, St. Louis County, and suburban Kansas City, they know the rules are rigged this way. And they laugh all the way to the bank thinking, well, as long as they don't figure it out, it's all good. It's all good for us.
Right.
So, look, back home, all you bipartisan people, you need to rally around this concept, and you've got a new elected person who's a very enthusiastic participant in everything political. Get him to get on board. Help him to understand. Let the community know. Educate the community about what this situation is. It's, you know, it's the assessment process. That's the mechanism by which we have a disproportionate percentage of the revenues that the state has to allocate specific to education.
Well, it's part of it. It's part of it, but I tell you, the factors that go into, I mean, all this is a mathematical equation.
Senator, but the rest of it, I mean, again, that you're speaking to things like, what's that mechanism that says if you're a school district that has less than 350 people,
That
will count you as 350 people, even if you've got 349 or 347 or 123 or 147,
right,
or 212. That all counts as if you have 350.
And that is a result-oriented calculation.
But that's just, That's just a byproduct of making the sausage.
Right, exactly. Right. And that's what I'm going to get to. Part of making that sausage in 05 was hold harmless provision, right?
There's a lot of things, a lot of gives and takes. Yep. Right. Yep. And that's why it took 2.5 years to do it.
But so why are we dealing with just that issue? Why aren't we dealing with, you know, I want to hear at some point here the opinion of some of the senators that represent some of those smaller districts. And what are the ways in which we could probably help maybe resolve, you know, maybe, I don't know, consolidation?
They don't want to be heard from. They don't want anybody to know.
Yeah.
How many St. Louisans know that a school district with less than 350 people gets counted in the funding formula as if they have 350 people? My answer would be none.
Yeah, you're right.
So
I didn't know that before I got up here. I mean, you start looking in this formula, and I know that, you know, you got to get a bill passed, right? So there's things that happen and deals are made.
Well, that's why it deserves the time and the attention, and it deserves to bring in all the stakeholders. It deserves to bring in everyone that needs to be heard. Actually, I think it would serve as a tremendous opportunity for those who don't understand any aspect of this to learn. And again, back home, it's interesting. When I first got down here, I met someone from the press, and I said, you know what, you guys need to do a lot better job explaining just what happens here, how it works, what are the big issues. You know, I said, you know, before the Blues and the Cardinals and the Rams, before their preseason begins, you have like the preseason insert in your papers that have all the players and the positions and all. And
I do love.
Why wouldn't you do the same thing with what goes on down here?
I love those inserts.
What goes on down here is a heck of a lot more important than in terms of the lives of our citizens than the preseason report on the Cardinals or the Rams. And so I really think this is an opportunity for, again, those in education back home, those business leaders, those in the media, to really stop and do all you can to educate the community about what is this thing called the funding formula. And again, you know, this is over $3 billion of a $7.2 billion discretionary budget, which is really what we have the ability to allocate here. So 3/7 of the budget is a funding formula that I would suggest that St. Louis County and other hold harmless districts have no part of. And I think that they need to stop and understand how that formula is created and how...
Well, right. And when you have, Senator, as I'm looking at some of this information that we have, when you have the disparity between, on one page from the school, I won't name the school district, the disparity between, I'm trying to look at the lowest number here, 24.9% of local funding, and then another district of 95%. I mean, we got a problem here, and nobody wants to deal with it.
Well, they don't have to deal with it. It's working.
Right. Well, I got news for you. Guess what happens in 2 years? It doesn't work anymore.
Right.
And that's why we're trying to put a Band-Aid on it to solve that issue so we don't have that quote-unquote cliff. Well, I got news for you. We better deal with that other stuff or we're approaching that cliff.
Yep.
And if you don't think that senators are going to stick up for their districts, okay, you're wrong. And it's about time we had a fundamental discussion about the foundation formula here and stop playing games with trying to get to a result, because that's all this is. It is a game. Last year, Senator Shields' super-duper hold-harmless stuff, it was an ill-conceived game. And I want to have a real discussion about how we fund it. And it's going to be probably uncomfortable, but that's what we're elected to do. You know, if we're not going to do it, nobody else is. And this issue is much bigger than political expediency, okay? It's much bigger than hearing from your superintendent back home about getting an extra 100 grand or less, you know, or losing 100 grand. It's much bigger than that. And until we want to deal with it, we're not going to start slapping on Band-Aids of these issues and fundamentally not address the problem. And if we're going to, you know, it is with all due respect, it is a little insulting, to be honest.
Senator, I'm holding the Missouri Supreme Court decision, I think from 2008. And what I came to understand over time, that it really is these types of things that trigger the willingness to redo the funding formula. It's when somebody comes around eventually to say, oh, this is unfair, the formula's unfair, and they file a complaint with the court, and it works its way through the courts, and the courts stop and they rule, and they say, you know what, it's unconstitutional, and that triggers the mechanism.
Right.
And I understand why we don't want to do this. Nobody campaigns ever to say, I'm going to Jeff City to redo the funding formula. It's not a lot of fun.
No.
It's a lot of work.
It is.
So a lot of it was made of the fact that, oh, well, in 2005, our formula survived the Supreme Court test. So we should never mess with it because it survived the thing that makes us go to work, that makes us have to do the heavy lifting, that makes us have to do... Well, it's great when you carve out something we just did domestic violence, which was almost a consent bill, and I'm thrilled everybody's support. And the things that are important to you, the things that you know a lot about, and you can get the stakeholders, you know the stakeholders. The problem with redoing the funding formula, the hassle with redoing the funding formula, is there's so many people you got to hear from in this process. And so I understand no one wants to do it, and they wait for the Supreme Court to tell them they got to do it. Okay? So much is made of the fact that in 2005, it survived. In 2008, the 2005 formula survived the Supreme Court. But there's some interesting stuff, and this is in a majority opinion. And I'm on page 24. For those that have this at home. So, but this provision does not indicate what the legislature may or must do regarding the commission's assessments. It actually quotes similarly, Article 10, Section 14 requires that the commission equalize assessments. Okay, now, this goes on. The separate opinion, the dissenting opinion, criticizes the equality of Missouri tax assessment scheme and the assessment data the commission calculated.
That's Judge Wolf, right? Judge Wolf?
Yep. And that's the opinion. This is in the majority, though. Majority has mentioned it. It says, and it further highlights the unconstitutionally disparate taxation is disallowed pursuant to the court's opinion, and it cites another case. And then it goes on to say that eventually the plaintiffs implicitly recognized this and abandoned it in their argument. For these reasons, although the separate opinion raises complex and important issues concerning Missouri's assessment scheme and its relationship to educational financing, the question of equalizing assessments is for another day. Okay, newly elected St. Louis County Assessor, the question of equalizing assessments is for another day. That day is the day after you're sworn in. The question of equalizing assessments is for the day after you're sworn in. This court's role is limited to deciding the issues before it and not making advisory opinions. This court cannot offer advisory opinions on issues that may arise in the future. The court, the majority opinion, is telling us what to do next. It's telling you to equalize the assessment process, or someone should bring forth a suit that says you're not.
Right.
Well, with all due respect to your profession, Senator, I just assume not engage the court. Engage the court is the least amount of time as possible, but I do think the time has come for St. Louis County to begin the process of equalizing their assessments, and I think when that happens, that this body might be wishing they had the existing funding formula.
Yeah, well, you know, Judge Wolf was at St. Louis U Law School when I was there for a year. And then he was appointed to the Supreme Court. And I think he wrote the dissenting opinion that dealt with more specifically the assessment issues. But I'm looking at another page here, and here we go. 27%, the district shall remain nameless. 93% on the same page. I mean, this is every page. We can choose to, I guess, sweep this under the rug again. But if we come back next year, I don't see a way that we get this done. Maybe I'm wrong. But if we come back next year with the same idea of just sticking it to hold harmless districts, we're not any further down the road. I think the time is come for the adults to get in a room here and figure this thing out. And I think our good friend from St. Louis City has some guests he'd like to introduce.
Three senators on the floor. The senator from the fourth, for what purpose are you wishing to interrupt this debate?
To seek unanimous consent to introduce a very special guest.
The senator from the fourth is seeking unanimous consent to introduce a very special guest. Is there any objection? Seeing none, Senator, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. To your right and to my left, Alderman from the 22nd Ward from the City of St. Louis, a close personal friend I've known for a number of years, Alderman Jeffrey Boyd.
Would the Alderman from St. Louis thank you for your service? Please rise to be welcomed by the Missouri Senate. Thank you for coming up today. Senators, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Another maybe uncomfortable point, but the only reason I'm doing this is that I think, again, we got to look at beyond our just immediate self-interest here and start talking about fairness. There is a dollar value modifier, okay? It's based on wages in an area as determined by the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. You want to know what the range is?
No, I mean, I don't know. I like
one is the basement, okay? You can't be any lower than one.
Okay.
You know what? You want to know what the zenith, the apex of what that measurement is? 1.104.
Okay, so hold on for a second. So let me just wrap my brain around this. So what they're saying is that if I want to go buy a two-bedroom, 2,400-square-foot house in the suburbs of Jefferson City, over by the mall or something,
yeah.
Right? Okay. And, you know, it's interesting. Cost of housing and transportation and food, that's about 45% of the total cost of a household. Okay, so it's a big number. So,
oh, and you've got six kids, so I think.
I'm talking generically. So, okay, so a family of two, 2.2 kids, buys a 2,400 square foot two bedroom house in the suburbs of Jefferson City, and then drives wherever they have to go to work, which maybe it's 5 miles, maybe it's 10 miles. But one thing I love about Jefferson City is everything's pretty close. Okay, so. That exact same family, if someone got transferred, let's just actually say, let's say that person is a public school teacher in Jefferson City. And now that public school teacher in Jefferson City gets transferred to the Webster Grove School District, where you live, or Ladue School District, where I live, or Kirkwood, where you live. Okay, so, and they go to try to replicate that 2,400 square foot, two-bedroom house. And what you're telling me is that the cost of that house, by this formula, can only be 15% more? And you know what's interesting about that thought, Senator? Is that when you...
No, I think actually 10.
10% more is what this... Okay. So now what's interesting, though, is that when you do an assessment the way they do them in Jefferson City of that house, and you do a certificate of value assessment of the value of that house in Kirkwood or in Ladue, in Brentwood... There's no way the difference of those two houses in their assessed value is 10%. It's so far north of 10%, it's laughable.
But wait a minute. So explain to me why then we wouldn't want to...
With that mechanism you mentioned, it's the modifier, it's meant to say, well, what does it cost to live and work in Jeff City? What does it cost to live and work in Brentwood? What does it cost to live and work in Jackson County? Because there's differences in the cost of living. Well, great. Differences in the cost of living. The differences can only be 10%?
Well, I would argue, Senator, that we don't want to have that real discussion, right? Because
there are a lot of things that the funding formula advocates as it exists today, which is this bill is to extend it.
Three senators on the floor. The senator from Johnson, for what purpose are you seeking recognition?
Thank you, Mr. President. I ask this bill be laid on the informal calendar.
The bill shall be placed on the informal calendar. Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, Senate will be the order of business of Senate bills on third reading.
Senate bills for third reading. Senate Bill number 322, the Senator from Boone.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that Senate Bill 322 be brought before the body for third read and final passage.
You've heard the motion from the Senator from Boone. All those in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill is before the body. Senator from Boone.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that Senate Bill 322 be third read and finally passed. This is the extension of the FRA. It does have the amendment on it from the Senator from Buchanan, which takes everything except the hospitals to a 4-year extension, takes the hospitals to a 2-year extension.
You have heard the motion from the senator from Boone. All those in favor, or anyone desire to speak upon that motion? Seeing none, Senator, you're recognized. Close.
I close.
The senator from Boone is closed on his motion to read the third time and place upon his final passage, Senate Bill number 322. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Senate Bill 322, an act relating to certain provider taxes. Senators Brown,
aye.
Callahan,
aye.
Chappelle Nadal, Crowell, Cunningham, Curls, Dempsey, Dixon, Engler, Goodman, Green, Justice, Kevany, Kehoe, Kraus, Lager, Lamping, Lemke, Mayer, McKenna, Munslinger, Nieves, Parson, Pierce, Ferguson, Richard, Ridgway, Roop, Schaff, Schaefer,
aye.
Schmidt,
aye.
Stouffer,
aye.
Wasson,
aye.
Wright-Jones.
Senator from the ninth votes aye. Senator from Cole votes aye. Senator from the 23rd votes aye. The senator from Green votes aye. The senator from the 8th votes aye. The senator from the 1st votes aye. The senator from Howell votes no.
Mr. President.
Senator from the 13th votes aye. The senator from Jefferson votes aye. The senator from Nottoway votes aye. The senator from Lewis votes aye. Anybody else? The senator from Cape votes aye. By your vote of 30 aye and 1 no, you have read the third time and placed upon his final passage Senate Bill number 322. Here, if there's no objection, let the journal show that the titling and the perfecting motions were made and carried. Senator from the 23rd.
Objection. The Senate will go to the order of business of announcements.
Announcements. Senator from Lewis.
Yes, Mr. President, announcement.
Please.
Your Committee on Agriculture, Food Production, and Natural Resources will be meeting at 12 noon and SCR 1.
Further announcements. Senator from Johnson.
Your Committee on Education will begin promptly at 1:30 in the Senate Lounge. Education, 1:30. Thank you.
Further announcements. Seeing none, Senator from Stoddard.
Thanks, Mr. President. Would you please refer the House Committee substitute for House Concurrent Resolution number 23? That used to be my old jersey number in basketball years ago in eighth grade. But anyway, would you refer that to the Committee on Rules, Joint Rules, Resolutions, and Ethics, Mr. President?
It shall so be referred. Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. No further business coming before the body. I move the Senate stand in recess until 3 p.m. this day.
You have heard the motion from the senator from 23rd. All those in favor of that motion, please say aye. All those opposed, please say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The Senate will stand in recess until 3 p.m. today.